Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Dan Friedel, and John Russell. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
In a yearly American tradition, a famous groundhog has predicted there will be 6 more weeks of winter. The animal, named Punxsutawney Phil, climbed out of his hole Tuesday morning in the town of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. A ceremony takes place each February 2nd to mark the tradition, which is known as Groundhog Day. If the groundhog can see his shadow, the tradition says, there will be 6 more weeks of winter. If the animal's shadow cannot be seen, Americans can expect an early spring. A group of people from the local community lead the ceremony. They are known as Punxsutawney Phil's Inner Circle. Members of the group said they woke the furry creature up at 7:25 a.m. Shortly after this year's prediction became clear, one member of the Inner Circle shared a message to the public he said Phil had expressed earlier in the day. The message stated that after the longer expected winter, you can look forward to one of the most beautiful and brightest springs you've ever seen. Another member spoke about the unusual nature of the past year. He noted that people have been talking about life being similar to the subject of the 1993 film Groundhog Day. In the movie, a reporter visits Punxsutawney to cover the event, but becomes stuck in time. He then has to repeat the same day over and over again until he becomes a better person. It has felt like at times we're all living the same day over and over again, the member said. However, Groundhog Day also shows us that the monotony ends, the cycle will be broken. He added that there would only be one Groundhog Day this year, and that a new day is coming over the horizon. The event, however, looked very different this year because of the coronavirus pandemic. While in the past, thousands of people have traveled to Punxsutawney for the event, no crowds were permitted this year. The ceremony was held virtually. A live broadcast of the activities, which at times had up to 15,000 watchers, played videos from past Groundhog Day celebrations ahead of this year's prediction. When Punxsutawney Phil appeared, the president of the Inner Circle, Jeff Lundy, declared, "You look beautiful." Another member then announced, "We have all passed through the darkness of night, but now see hope in the morning's bright light. But now, when I turn to see, there's a perfect shadow cast of me." This year's prediction, like many years in the past, came as a major snowstorm hit the U.S. Northeast. I'm Brian Lynn.
The coronavirus worldwide health crisis forced the postponement of the 2020 Tokyo Summer Olympics to this year. It remains unclear if the Games will take place as planned in July 2021. Athletes around the world who hope to qualify for the Olympics are still trying to stay fit. That includes a group of four runners from the world's youngest country, South Sudan. They're training with one of their coaches in Japan. The runners are working out in Maebashi, a city about 100 kilometers from Tokyo. Many athletes who are among the best in the world at their events were sad when the virus caused the Olympics to be postponed. But the African athletes said they do not mind the delay because they are able to improve. 18-year-old Akun Akun is one of those athletes. He competes in the 400-meter race and the hurdles. He said he is just putting all his attention on his training. "I don't want to confuse my mind," he said. Both the head of the International Olympic Committee and the Prime Minister of Japan, Yoshihide Suga, recently expressed their desire to hold the Games as planned later this year. A Japanese newspaper, however, recently asked athletes what they wanted. Most of the athletes who responded, 86%, said they wanted the Games delayed again or canceled altogether. In Japan, the government recently declared a state of emergency in Tokyo and several other areas. Abraham Majoke competes in the 1500-meter race. The 21-year-old runner said it will be important for people from South Sudan to see athletes from their country at the Olympics. That is because South Sudan is a country that is still healing from a civil war. Images of athletes from South Sudan at the Olympics will help the nation develop a sense of being one group of people. The image of the team here is a big sign of unity because all of us are from different states, said Majoke. When our people back home watch us all from different states working together and representing the country at the world level, the people will be really happy. About 400,000 people died during the war in South Sudan. The warring groups signed a peace treaty in 2018, but many agreements have not yet been put in place. The city of Maebashi is trying to help the South Sudanese runners. Groups have donated about $300,000 to support their training. Other people are spending time helping the runners with life in Japan. The total will be enough to pay for their stay through the completion of the Games, if they happen. I'm Dan Friedel.
The Decatur, Georgia school system, near the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, is in a community full of health professionals. Decatur is a politically liberal area outside Atlanta. Many public health and medical professionals in the community gave suggestions about how schools should operate during the coronavirus crisis. Yet, deep divisions between the parents appeared. The disputes in Decatur demonstrate the issues many American communities have faced while trying to decide what is safe and acceptable for schools in the middle of a health crisis. Parents in the Decatur school system had different ideas about reopening schools. One emergency medicine doctor said early reopening plans for the system's 5,000-plus students were not safe enough. A doctor doing work for the CDC suggested reopenings should be delayed. Others, including a leader of the CDC's COVID-19 vaccine efforts, argued the district could get students back in classrooms safely. They suggested that not returning students risked their development and mental health. David Doody heads the Decatur school system. The challenge for me has been trying to weigh all of these things that I'm being told by experts and non-experts alike to try to make the best decision that we can, he said. And that's what I, and I'm sure other superintendents, have been struggling with. Superintendent is the term used to describe the head of schools in a particular area in the United States. In the school reopening debate, each side argued that data and science supported their view. The debate sometimes became angry and unpleasant. Health officials say there is growing evidence that children are not the main drivers of community spread. Virus spread is fairly low in schools where mask wearing, social distancing, and contact tracing are in effect. The CDC says that for schools to open safely, they and their surrounding communities must take preventive measures. But without clear reopening rules from federal and state leaders, school officials have had to consider the science themselves, Doody said. When Doody released a reopening plan for the fall, some parents and teachers questioned whether it was safe. When he stopped the reopening, other parents got angry, criticizing the quick change. Some suggested online schooling was not something that could work for long. Tiffany Tesfamichael is a single parent who moved to Decatur because of the schools. She was concerned about neighbors who were against opening schools but did not oppose opening businesses. Why aren't they out here with signs protesting restaurants if they really, really mean it? She said. Doody ended up asking a large group of volunteers to make suggestions for reopening schools. He then decided on a new plan for January. The plan called for younger students to attend school for part of the day in small groups. Older students would continue with online learning. Some CDC employees and other health professionals objected to part of the plan. They argued in a letter to a community news website that safe, in-person learning was possible for older students if the right preventive measures were taken. They suggested that decision-makers were misreading evidence about virus spread in schools. A hospital doctor treating COVID-19 patients sent her own letter warning that reopening schools as cases increased would be irresponsible. Around Decatur, people tried to avoid the issue in everyday discussions with their neighbors. but the disputes continued during school board meetings and on social media. In a Facebook group for parents, the disagreements got so bad that some users said their social media posts had been shared with their employers by others trying to insult them. Carrie Ludlam is a parent of middle school students in the Decatur school system. She worries about the discussions yet to come. Ludlam said people insulted each other from behind their computers, forgetting that at some point the world is going to get back to normal, she told the Associated Press. And we're going to have to face the things we said to each other and the things we accused each other of, she added. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The presidential election of 1928 gave American voters a clear political choice. The Democratic Party nominated Al Smith. He was the popular governor of the state of New York. The Republican Party chose Herbert Hoover. He was an engineer and businessman who served as Secretary of Commerce for Presidents Warren Harding and Calvin Coolidge. Rich Kleinfeld and Harry Monroe tell us about the presidential election of 1928.
Governor Alfred Smith of New York had campaigned for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1924. But he was defeated at the party convention by a compromise candidate, John Davis. 4 years later, however, Smith could not be stopped. He had a strong record as governor of the nation's most heavily populated state. He campaigned for the presidency on a policy of building new electric power stations under public control. Smith knew that many conservative Americans might be worried by his new ideas and his belief in strong government. So he chose as his campaign manager a Republican industrial leader who had worked with General Motors, DuPont, and other major companies. Smith hoped this would prove his faith in the American private business system.
Al Smith was a strong political leader and an effective governor, but he frightened many Americans, especially conservative citizens living in rural areas. They lived on farms or in small towns. Al Smith was from the city. And not just from any city, but New York City, a place that seemed big and dirty and filled with foreign people and strange traditions. Al Smith's parents came from Ireland. He grew up in New York and worked as a salesman at the Fulton Fish Market. Smith was an honest man. But many rural Americans simply did not trust people from big cities. Al Smith seemed to them to represent everything that was new, different, and dangerous about American life. But being from New York City was not Al Smith's only problem. He also opposed the new national laws that made it illegal to buy or produce alcoholic drinks. And he had political ties to the New York political machine. But worst of all, in the eyes of many Americans, Al Smith was a Roman Catholic.
from George Washington through Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, and up to Calvin Coolidge, every American president had been male, white, and a Protestant Christian. Of course, there was no law requiring a candidate to be Protestant, but millions of traditional Americans just were not ready to give their vote to a Roman Catholic. Opponents of the Smith campaign generally did not speak openly about his religion, but many of them were afraid that Smith would take his orders from the Vatican in Rome instead of working with the Congress in Washington. Al Smith fought back. He told the country, "I am unable to understand how anything I was taught to believe as a Catholic could possibly be in conflict with what is good citizenship. My faith," he said, "is built upon the laws of God. There can be no conflict between them."
But many Protestant Americans thought there was a conflict, and they looked to the Republican Party to supply a strong candidate to oppose Smith and the Democrats. The Republicans did just that. They nominated former Secretary of Commerce Herbert Hoover, one of the country's most popular men. Hoover was well known to Americans. People trusted him, and they liked the way he had gained great personal success from poor beginnings. In fact, Hoover's life story would have pleased Abraham Lincoln, another American who rose from a poor family to fame. Hoover was born in the farm state of Iowa in 1874. His father was a poor metal worker who kept moving his family from state to state. Herbert Hoover's father died when the boy was just 6 years old. His mother died 4 years later. Young Herbert had to move to the western state of Oregon to live with his mother's brother. Herbert's uncle was luckier in life than Herbert's parents. He had made money in the land business, and he helped the boy gain admission to Stanford University in California. At the university, Herbert showed great skill in mathematics, and he decided to go into business as a geologist, studying the science of the earth.
After college, Herbert Hoover got a job as a mine worker. During the next several years, Hoover spent most of his time working as an engineer in foreign countries, and he succeeded beyond his greatest dreams. By the time he was 40 years old, he had earned more than $1 million. After World War I, he organized the effort to provide food for starving people in Europe. He did an excellent job, winning praise from people in Europe and the United States alike. Next, Hoover joined the administration of President Warren Harding, serving as the Secretary of Commerce. Again, he did a very good job. Hoover left the cabinet in 1925. But 2 years later, he organized efforts to provide relief for victims of a flood in the southern state of Mississippi. And again, Americans all around the country took note of this quiet, serious man who did such effective work in so many different kinds of situations. Some Americans, however, did not like Hoover, including some people who usually supported Republicans. For example, many professional Republican politicians did not trust him because he had spent most of his life in business, not politics. Some stock market traders thought Hoover might change the rules on the New York Stock Exchange. And many farmers believed Hoover had no new ideas about how to solve their growing economic problems.
This, then, was the choice Americans faced in 1928. On the one hand, Al Smith, a Democrat, a Roman Catholic, a politician from the city, a man wanting some social change. And on the other hand, Herbert Hoover, a Republican, a businessman who had proven the dream that even a poor boy could become great in America, a man who seemed to succeed with every effort he touched. The main issue in the campaign was not economics or religion, but the new national laws banning alcoholic drinks. Hoover was for the laws, Smith against them. The two candidates also argued about how to provide aid to struggling farmers and how to increase electricity and water supplies.
Herbert Hoover won the election of 1928. It was one of the greatest victories in presidential history. Hoover won 58% of the votes. Smith got just 40%. And Hoover captured 444 electoral votes to Smith's 87. And so it was that the engineer and businessman, Herbert Hoover, entered the White House in 1929. There was some trouble the day he moved in. Outgoing President Coolidge was a man who watched every dollar he owned. And he accused some White House workers of stealing his shoes on the day of the inauguration. But finally, safe, conservative, businesslike Herbert Hoover was leading the country.
The nation's stock market reacted by pushing stock prices to record high levels. Everyone expected that economic growth would continue and expand. But the happy times were just a dream. Within 1 year, the stock market collapsed. Millions of people lost their jobs. The nation fell into the worst economic crisis it had ever faced. Herbert Hoover was not personally responsible for the crisis. In many ways, it was his own bad luck to be elected just before the disaster struck. But it was his job to guide the nation through its troubled waters. And he would prove to be the wrong person to give such leadership. His 4 years in office would be one of the most difficult periods in the nation's history.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.